The Battle for Liberty, Episode 59.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Battle for Liberty. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Tilden. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. Don't ever miss an episode of The Battle for Liberty. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes and Stitcher. That way, every episode will be delivered to your device with no effort required. It couldn't be easier. All right, well, welcome back to another episode of the Battle for Liberty podcast. Before I get started into today's episode, I want to let you know that the Battle for Liberty website has been completely revamped, given a facelift. I think it looks much nicer overall from top to bottom. And I'm going to be working on the website more and more in the coming weeks. But all you need to know for right now is if you haven't checked out the website recently, go on over to battleforliberty.com and check it out. I hope that you like it. I hope it's easier to navigate and easier to find the content that you want to find. Additionally, I'm going to try to start blogging a little bit more, just like I'm going to start podcasting a little bit more. I'd like to get back into writing a little bit, and I'm going to take the same approach to writing that I'm taking to these podcast episodes. You wouldn't know it from last week's episode, but my intention is to put out more content by making the content itself a little bit shorter. So the podcasts will be a little shorter, the blog posts will be a little bit shorter, and hopefully those will come out frequently enough that it'll spark conversation and provide provide some momentum for even more content after that. So all of that just goes to say that I've been working on the website and working on creating content a little bit more compared with the last 6 to 9 months, and so I hope that you enjoy it. All right, so the topic for today is going to be abortion. And the reason I want to talk about abortion today is because I myself have been spending quite a lot of time researching abortion and abortion debate tactics and things of that nature in my own spare free time outside from the podcast. And then providentially, one of my, dare I say, libertarian heroes, Dave Smith, host of the Part of the Problem podcast, recently announced that he and his fiance are expecting their first child in December of this year. And so that sparked Dave on his podcast to talk about how this major life event has maybe forced him to look at the issue of abortion a little bit deeper and a little bit more philosophically than he had in the past. And he put out an absolutely fantastic episode earlier this week that I listened to, and it really struck me as the perfect excuse to visit the topic of abortion here on this show from a libertarian perspective. Now, the interesting thing is that there are many in the libertarian movement who want to claim definitively that the libertarian position is to be pro-choice. And there are a couple of reasons why many libertarians make this claim, not the least of which is the whole "my body, my choice" slogan that is put forth by the pro-choice movement. Being that libertarians do believe that we own our bodies and no one else can possibly own our bodies, it might, for some people, seem natural to take that argument to mean that a woman who is pregnant has every right to do with her body whatever she feels. And unfortunately, I don't agree with this because I think it's taking a short-sighted approach to the non-aggression principle. Of course, I do not in any way, shape, or form disagree with the notion that we own our bodies, but I don't believe that just because a woman owns her body, that she has a right to violently aggress against the body of another human being. And so my defense for a pro-life position stems from the fact that I believe that a study of natural rights and a study of the scientific data that we now have points conclusively to the understanding that an unborn person in the womb of a woman is in fact a living human organism. And because they are a living human organism, that they deserve the same rights and protections as every other living human organism on the planet. So let's dive into that a little bit deeper so you can understand why, from a libertarian perspective, I am fully and staunchly pro-life. Now, as a quick side note, I know a lot of people are well aware of my Christian faith, and that does not play a small role in my pro-life stance, but I think it's really important to emphasize the fact that everything I'm going to talk about on this episode supports a pro-life position purely from a natural rights and scientific perspective, meaning you do not have to be religious to agree with the viewpoint that I'm about to put forward. I'm not going to cite scripture, although I could. I'm not going to cite church teaching or sacred tradition, although I could. But I'm not going to do that because I know there are a lot of people who are not religious, and those arguments will mean nothing to them. But I believe we don't necessarily need those religious arguments in order to make a very good, principled pro-life case. All right, so let's jump into it. First and foremost, I think science tells us definitively that an unborn person is in fact a living human organism. Let's break that down. There's three parts to that. Number one, from the very moment of conception, when a sperm meets an egg and combines to form a zygote, that separate organism is alive. And we know this because from the moment of conception, that zygote is reproducing cellularly. It is dividing. It's also taking in nutrients. By anyone's definition, an organism that takes in nutrients and divides via cellular reproduction is alive. So we know that the unborn are alive. Next, it's very easy to know that the unborn are humans. They're the offspring of two other humans. They have human DNA, and they have their own separate DNA. So we now know that this is a separate living human. The last thing we need to understand is that this unborn being is different, is very much different from, say, an arm or a piece of tissue or an organ or a tumor or anything like that, because the final requirement is that it is a complete organism. Now, granted, it's at a very early and very beginning stage of development, but unlike a tumor or someone's arm or anything else, any part of a body, given time and given protection, the unborn will grow into a mature member of the human species. No other part that you might be able to easily cut out of your body can do that. If you take out a tumor, it won't grow into a human being. If you leave a tumor in, it will not grow into a human being. If you take out your appendix, it won't grow into a human being. And if you leave your appendix in, it will not grow into another human being. So science very easily tells us that the unborn are alive, they're human, and they're complete organisms. And, you know, interestingly enough, even standard medical textbooks agree that life begins at fertilization. There's a quote from a standard medical textbook called Human Embryology and Teratology, and it says, quote, "Although human life is a continuous process, fertilization is a critical landmark because, under ordinary circumstances, a new genetically distinct human organism is thereby formed." So, given that information, my stance is that if we're going to use the laws of society to protect living human organisms outside the womb, then I think we should protect living human organisms inside the womb as well. Now, there is a good libertarian debate to be had about, well, is the state the best vehicle for protecting your right to life? So let's move away from the topic of an unborn human being and talk for just a second about people who were already born. Let's talk about me. Let's talk about you. There is a good debate to be had as to whether or not the state's laws against murder are effective. And I'm not going to tackle that here. All I'm going to simply say is, look, even in the smallest of small minarchist states, or even in Ancapistan, where no state exists, there would be laws to protect human life. They may not be enforced by the state, they may be enforced by community rule, they may be enforced by private property, by banishment, by things like that. But there would be laws and rules to protect human life. And so all I ask is that whatever laws exist that protect human life, and we have many laws currently today, even in our statist society, we have many laws that protect human life. I simply ask that that human life be protected regardless of its stage of development. Now, granted, the unborn are at the very beginning stages of their development, but I don't think there's any logical way to make a distinction between the born and the unborn without some very uncomfortable and nasty political ramifications. So what I'm trying to say is we cannot try to draw a line in human developmental progression where we say human beings, separate living human beings, up until a certain stage are expendable and can be killed and disposed of with no problem. But then at a certain stage, they become worthy of our protection. Where do we draw that line? No one's been able to give me an answer that doesn't also include the justifiable killing of born human beings. So for these scientific reasons alone, I think it's worthwhile as a libertarian to come down on the pro-life side of this debate. But I want to go just a little bit deeper before I finish up my thoughts on the abortion issue and talk specifically about some pretty well-known positions within the libertarian universe on abortion specifically. Maybe most notably, we should talk about Murray Rothbard's position on abortion. Murray Rothbard famously came down as an advocate of pro-choice, and he does this specifically because he wants to defend the right of women to continue to own their bodies and have nobody say anything against that ownership and nobody force a woman to carry a child and to birth a child. Okay, his argument goes something like this. Because all people own their bodies and should have autonomy over their bodies, then no group of people have the right to get together and force a woman to have something inside of her body, which, as he put it very callously, acts as a parasite, and that because she owns her body, she has the right to eject it from her body whenever she wants, and that if the being dies as a result of this ejection, well, that's just an unfortunate side effect. Now, this is specifically an area of Murray Rothbard's philosophy with which I disagree wholeheartedly. As much as I love Murray Rothbard and I credit him with bringing me around to what I find to be 99% perfection in terms of a political philosophy, this would be that 1% where I believe he is totally and unbelievably incorrect. First, to refer to an unborn human being as a parasite is pretty callous in my mind. Second, he goes straight for the property ownership aspect of owning your body. And I have complete sympathy with owning your own body in every case except for the case of pregnancy. You see, I view pregnancy as a special case that does not exist in any other circumstance in this world, specifically because there is no other way for humans to procreate. The very fact that mammalian procreation is as special as it is warrants special consideration. So we cannot simply think of a pregnancy as a parasite invading a woman's body, a woman's property, right? On this show all the time, we talk about you owning your body is just a property right. Well, I still agree with that. But what about the property rights of the unborn? The unborn are put in that position, in that vulnerable position, through no act of their own. And to compare an unborn human being to a parasite is to completely misunderstand what a parasite is and what an unborn baby is. Sure, an unborn baby might have a few similar characteristics of a parasite in that the unborn will use the resources and the energies and many other things of its host, but That's where the similarities end. For a parasite does not belong inside of my body. It might get in there through some accident or some, circumstance of where I've been or something of that nature. But the parasite was not created specifically to exist inside of me. In no way, shape, or form can we view the unborn as parasites. The unborn, by the very fact that they are mammals, were designed to be created and to be nourished and protected inside a woman's body. This is where they belong, and this is where they grow and develop. You cannot say the same thing about a parasite. So I don't believe Rothbard was correct to call the unborn a parasite. And I also believe that his conclusions are thereby incorrect. I feel that Rothbard completely ignores the fact that the unborn, being that we know definitively that they are living human organisms, I believe that they deserve the same rights and protections as everybody else. And so when the pro-choice libertarians will, they'll side with every other pro-choice activist in saying, my body, my choice, my question to them is, well, what about the body of the unborn? What about their choice? What about his or her choice? Isn't it our responsibility as mature, intellectual members of the human species to protect those members of the human species who are so young that they absolutely need our care and our protection in order for them to thrive? I think the answer is unmistakably yes, they do deserve our protection. And therefore, if we live in a society whose laws include the protection of born life, then they must also include the protection of unborn life. After all, it's a fairly well-established legal precedent that parents and legal guardians have a responsibility to make good decisions for their offspring and to make sure that before they reach an age of rational decision-making, that we make those rational decisions for them. And so just as we would assume that a 6-month-old baby does not want to be killed because of the fact that the unborn have been proven to be living human organisms, we must also assume that those human beings don't want to be killed, and we have a responsibility to honor that wish. All right, let's move on to another common objection that I hear from pro-choice libertarians. They'll say something along the lines of, well, if you make abortion illegal and you codify that in law, then all of a sudden every death of an unborn child becomes suspect, much in the way that the death of born human beings is typically suspect. And so for the large amount of natural miscarriages that happen, you want to empower the state to investigate every single miscarriage as if it were a homicide? How invasive this would be on the part of the state? Well, I see where that argument is coming from, but it's rather absurd as far as I'm concerned. And the reason is found right within the example that these pro-choice libertarians bring up. They bring up, well, any death of an unborn child would have to be investigated as a homicide. And that's not exactly true. I mean, when you think about an unborn child, they would be classified much in the same way that we classify specifically high risk, medically speaking, high risk born individuals, whether the very young with terminal illnesses or the very old towards the end of their lives. It's actually very, very common that if and when those people die, specifically because they are in a very delicate circumstance and in a circumstance that everyone around them understands could be fatal, typically those are not investigated as homicides. For example, if you have a very sick child with a terminal illness and they die in the hospital, that's not examined as a homicide unless there's something very suspicious about it. The same thing goes for a very elderly person towards the end of their natural life. If they happen to be in hospice or if they happen to be in the hospital fighting some sort of illness, if they've seen a physician recently who can attest to the fact that they were very ill, then the police very often will not investigate that as a homicide because there's nothing suspicious. And so our society has figured out a way to make a determination between suspicious death and expected death. And unfortunately, we just have to accept the fact that the unborn are in a very precarious situation in the very beginning of their lives. And I believe that natural miscarriages would be handled in that way. So unless something is wildly suspicious, unless it's suspected that there was an intent to kill an unborn person, I can't imagine it being handled any differently than how we handle the born human beings in this world. All right, a related objection to this that deals with the size of the state and the scope of the state's power goes something like this. The pro-choice libertarian would say, well, you want to take an action that's currently legal that people are accustomed to performing and overnight make it illegal. And so you take abortion and basically make it murder, codified by law, and all of a sudden, you're going to be sending doctors and women in the thousands and thousands to jail. You're going to throw them in a cage and lock them away, you know, as if they committed first-degree murder. And to this objection, I say the following. In every other instance of unjustified killing, whether it's codified as murder or manslaughter or you know, negligent homicide, or you know, however it's codified, it's different in every state. But regardless of how it's codified, you know, we as a society recognize and accept the fact that there are certain circumstances that make culpability and punishment different in every single case. For example, if I am in a fit of rage because I find out that my business partner has stolen all of our money and gambled it away, and in a fit of rage, I lose my temper and I hit him with a baseball bat and he dies, well, that would certainly be an unjustified killing, but it wouldn't be first-degree murder. So in the same way, making abortion illegal would not necessarily lead to every single person involved being charged with first-degree murder and being either locked away or given the death penalty. And let me take this moment to just be crystal clear as to what I'm talking about. I'm not necessarily even talking about empowering a state as we know it today. I'm simply saying that based on the science and my understanding of the status of an unborn person as a living human organism, that if we are going to have rules and laws, that they should be applied equally, regardless of the developmental stage. I'm basically saying I don't think laws should discriminate against human beings based on their developmental stage. That's basically what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily advocating, in fact, I'm definitely not advocating for more power to a state. I'm simply saying whatever situation we find ourselves in, be it the state that we currently have, or some sort of covenant community in Ancapistan, I would want that society to recognize the dignity and the value of the unborn, just as we recognize the dignity and the value of the born. So I hope that properly outlines and explains my position as a pro-life libertarian. I am firmly of the belief that if you are a libertarian and you advocate for the primary principles being property rights and non-aggression, and knowing scientifically that the unborn are the exact same living human organism as I am, albeit at an earlier stage of development, that we should advocate for property rights of the unborn, namely their own property rights in their own bodies, and we should apply the non-aggression principle to them. They are innocent. They have not done anything to aggress against any person. This is often where we hear the example of, well, what about in cases of rape? The woman didn't ask for that child to be inside of her womb in that aspect. Okay, that's true, and that is a very difficult case. And before I talk about it, we should understand that abortions resulting from rape and incest and things like that account for something like less than 1% of all abortions. So we really are talking about extreme cases here. But let's go ahead and address it. If we recognize that the unborn are living human organisms, then as abhorrent and just vile as it is for a woman to be violated in the act of rape, that does not justify the killing of an innocent human being. We don't even give the death penalty to the rapist in the United States. Why would we justify giving the death penalty to an innocent child that's been created out of no violent act of its own? It just makes no sense to me. So I think if you're being consistent, and I do ask that we be consistent, if we understand that the unborn are living human organisms, then we must protect them even in the awful circumstance where they've come into existence as a product of a violent act. I'm all for punishing the violent actor. I am never in favor of punishing an innocent bystander. All right, that's going to have to be where we leave it. We're approaching running out of time here, so I'll have to leave it there. But a couple of reminders before we go. I want to make sure that you check out the show notes page for this episode, which is battleforliberty.com/59. There you'll find a couple of different resources that I've relied heavily upon in creating this podcast. And of course, the podcast episode by Dave Smith, his show Part of the Problem, is linked on the show notes page, as well as an episode of the Scottish Liberty podcast with my good friend Anthony Samaroff and his partner Tom Laird. They did a great abortion discussion several weeks back, and I listened to it as well and used it to help prepare this episode for you. So you should check out both of those at the show notes page, battleforliberty.com/59. All right, well, that's going to do it. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, battle on.